In Ireland, nothing gets us talking like lions.
Tea?
Small talk.
Well, Jimmy, shocking weather we're having.
Big talk.
Even I could have played county. Office talk.
I'm MIA in the AM, but I'll circle back on the KPIs.
Real talk.
Milk before tea? Should be a criminal offence.
You could say we talk too much.
But the truth is,
we don't talk nearly enough. Lions puts the talk into tea.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
My next guest is one of the world's preeminent scholars of the Holocaust. Born and raised in a kibbutz, Omer Bartov also served as an officer in the Israeli army. His latest book, Israel, What Went Wrong, focuses on the tragedy besetting Israel and Palestine, and it pulls no punches as it sets out how Israeli actions can only be described as genocide. And Omer Bartov joins me now. Good morning and welcome.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Now, I think it's important to lay out your own credentials in all of this. I mean, you were brought up as a Zionist. What in those days did being a Zionist mean?
Well, you know, I was born in the mid-1950s in a very different atmosphere. So Israel was a very small country. We had generally socialist inclinations. The notion was of social justice, first of all, for the Jewish population of Israel. There was very little talk about the Palestinians in the country. But there was an idea that the country would be a just country, that it would follow both its own declaration of independence, which spoke about it as providing justice, as was proclaimed by the prophets in the Old Testament, and in following some kind of social justice. And there was still talk of finding some kind of way of sharing the land with its Palestinian population. This is all before the war of 1967, in which Israel, of course, occupied, took over the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, and in fact came to occupy the very same Palestinians that it had expelled in 1948. And that began a process of major transformation of what the country was really about.
Now, when the so-called Nakba happened and Palestinians left the places where they believed to be their homeland and went elsewhere throughout the Middle East and beyond, that was a process really supervised by the international community, I suppose, of ethnic cleansing, moving people out. And you do distinguish between ethnic cleansing and genocide in your writing, in the sense that if you try to move a population out and they have nowhere to go and they cannot live, that then becomes a genocide.
Yes, so one of the main differences between what happened in 1948 and what has happened since 2023 is that in 1948, Israel, as it was becoming an independent state, its goal was to have a Jewish majority state. And the problem was that in Mandatory Palestine, 60% of the population were Palestinians. And so the Israeli military, either through intimidation or through a series of massacres, ejected the vast majority of the Palestinian population from what became the state of Israel. Now, at the time, the borders were open. So many of the Palestinians then fled by land or by sea to Lebanon, to Jordan, to Syria, to Egypt. And that was clearly a process of ethnic cleansing. In 2023, 2024, 2025, the Palestinians, the IDF had the same policy. Israel had the same policy, decided to respond to the attack by Hamas on October 7th by ethnically cleansing Gaza. But the Palestinians had no place to go to because most of Gaza is either the coast or the borders with Israel and a small strip of land which borders Egypt, and Egypt did not open its borders. So as has happened in many genocides in the past, going back to 1904 to the genocide in Namibia, when people can't leave when those who want to expel them are pushing them to leave and they won't or have no place to go to, then it becomes genocide. And that's what's happened in Gaza.
Now, the charge of anti-Semitism is leveled against many people. I'm not sure that you, as someone who was born in a kibbutz, who is Jewish by birth, can be labeled an anti-Semite by the administration. But I suspect your writings would bring that kind of charge against you.
Yes. I mean, some people have called me anti-Semitic or a self-hating Jew or all kinds of terminology, but that's just rhetoric. That actually means absolutely nothing. What is important is, and what I try to do in the book, is to talk about the facts as I understand them and to explain them as best I can. And I was quite reluctant to use the term genocide for what was happening in Gaza, in part because this term has been often used more as an allegation rather than in trying to see whether the events on the ground in any particular place conform to the genocide convention, the definition of genocide in the 1948 Genocide Convention, which is the only definition that matters under international law. And I reluctantly had to conclude that what Israel was doing was systematic obliteration of Gaza, whose goal was to destroy the Palestinians as a national group, in whole or in part, as such, very much in conformity with the 1948 definition.
Now, to try and confront what has been happening in Israel, and I mean, you are someone whose credentials, as I say, in terms of the history of the Holocaust, and you're writing about, you know, debunking the notion of the clean Wehrmacht, the German army, who didn't really know anything about extermination policies. But you say no. Many of them did, and they cooperated and even reveled in the extermination of Jewish people. So, as I say, your credentials are clear. How did it get to the point that ordinary Israelis, well-educated Israelis, can turn a blind eye to what their government and the IDF are doing?
Yes, you know, this is one of the things that really has baffled me, and that was the reason for my writing this book, because the Israel that I grew up in and the army that I served for 4 years in, including in the war of 1973, were very different from what Israeli society and the Israeli military are like today. And I'd say, you know, there are two elements here. One is that, as I mentioned before, after 1967, Israel became a 50-50 state. 50% of the people under Israeli control, under one kind of regime or another, are Palestinians, and 50% are Jews, but only the Jews have full democratic rights, although even those are being eroded as we speak. And that process of 59 years of occupying another people has had a dehumanizing effect. First of all, dehumanizing those you rule over, because that's what justifies bossing it over other people. And secondly, it dehumanizes those who do that. And the second element that has been important, that has come up a lot since October 7th, is that the Holocaust, which initially was a bit embarrassing in the years that I was growing up in Israel, it was a somewhat embarrassing event for the Zionist worldview, because it really, at the time, people spoke about the Jews having gone like sheep to the slaughter, and Zionism was about creating a militant fighting group, one that would never go down without fighting. By the 1980s, that changes, and the Holocaust becomes something else that is seen now as an imminent danger to Israeli existence, and Auschwitz is lurking behind the corner. And who can actually present that danger, considering that the IDF becomes, after 1973, the only real war, the last real war that Israel has fought against enemy armies? Who is that enemy? These are the Palestinians, who obviously do not represent an existential threat to Israel. So that creates a mentality in Israel, which, as I describe in the book, is both very aggressive and very fragile. There's always a fear that something like another Holocaust would happen. And when Hamas attacks on October 7th and murders 800 civilians brutally, a vast massacre, immediately this is described as the largest killing of Jews since the Holocaust. Hamas are being described as Nazis. And the population in Israel, large parts of it, and that's not only the right, but many, as you say, educated people, people who've traveled abroad, who see themselves as, you know, cosmopolitan, cannot believe that this is what happened to them. And there's a powerful urge just to eradicate those savages who somehow managed to take over parts of Israel and murder so many civilians.
I can recall in the days after October the 7th, there was massive global sympathy for Israel. And we did the comparison on this program. If it had happened here, how many people would have died and how outraged we all would have been. But gradually, and actually fairly fast, the response by Israel in terms of its targeting of hospitals and so on, the killing of children, and all the evidence appearing on our TV screens, attitudes began to change towards Israel. And yet any criticism of Israel was conflated with basically anti-Semitism. Any criticism of the IDF, any criticism of the Netanyahu government, the charge immediately came back, you're being anti-Semitic, and the Holocaust was kind of used as a cloak.
Yes, yeah, so first of all, if you make that proportionate comparison, you'd have to do it also with the vast numbers of Palestinian civilians who have been killed, which goes well beyond 70,000, at a minimum, a figure that even the IDF has concluded is correct, despite previous denials by the Israeli government. I wrote about this in early November 2023 in an op-ed in the New York Times, and I said by then about 10,000 people had already been killed in Gaza, mostly civilians. And I wrote that there was good evidence that war crimes and crimes against humanity had been committed, and that if this were not to be stopped right now, it could become genocide. And of course, it was not stopped. And even then, of course, there were those who said, if you say anything like that about Israel, that must be anti-Semitic rather than just relying on the facts. So I'm afraid that, as we know now, and that's, of course, in Ireland, in your country, but in many other countries, including in the United States, people have concluded, large parts of the population have concluded that what Israel is doing, whether we call it genocide or merely crimes against humanity and war crimes, is criminal, and that Israel has to be stopped. And those who try to deny it by saying that it's anti-Semitism are just trying to delegitimize observers who are simply looking at the facts.
Now, the question of what's happening in the United States, I mean, looking at the poll numbers, and the Americans are great at polling everything, but the support for Israel has declined, not just in the Democratic Party, but also in the Republican Party. And that's got to be worrying for Netanyahu, as long as he stays in power in Israel, and those who follow him, because effectively, the United States is almost like a blood transfusion of money and weaponry into Israel every year. If that stops, Israel then has to rely on its own armaments industry, and it would have no friends.
Well, absolutely. So the most important thing to understand is the limits of Israeli power over the last few decades have been set in Washington, D.C. and not in Jerusalem. And therefore, they're basically limitless in that area. If they're returned to Jerusalem, that Israel would have no choice but to opt for politics and diplomacy. And right now, as we see, it's opting only for the use of bombs. So that's crucial to understand. That was what I was trying to suggest already in November 23, because the U.S. could have stopped Israel's action in Gaza within a week or two. We know that. We know that now also because when President Trump tells Netanyahu stop doing it, Netanyahu stops because he knows that he has to. But often that doesn't come up. Now, I think it's possible that a new American administration, whether it's Democratic or Republican, will have a different attitude toward Israel for different reasons. But within, you know, within the Democratic Party, there are very strong currents now to change policy toward Israel because it has been so violent. And the Republican Party now, within the MAGA movement, there are elements now that are speaking in somewhat also anti-Semitic terms, that's real anti-Semitism, that Israel is pulling all the strings of American policy, it's controlling finance, Hollywood, the arms industry, and so forth. And whatever the reason is, it's possible that whether a Republican or a Democratic president comes next time, there might be a very different policy toward Israel. I think that would be a good thing. I think it would finally make Israelis understand that they have to find a compromise how to share that space between 7 million Palestinians and 7 million Jews.
The problem that they will always point to is that they literally could be outbred by their Palestinian neighbors and become a minority in their own country. What is the resolution to that particular demographic time bomb?
Well, I actually have always been against this notion. It's a rather, you know, fascist notion of demographics.
There is that statistic, which I think is borne out everywhere, that the more educated a population becomes, the fewer children it produces per couple.
Exactly, which means that if people live in better conditions, if they're better educated, they want a higher standard of living, then they tend to have fewer children. In the 1980s, this was spoken about in Israel as the demographic bomb was that Israel was controlling so many Palestinians, and soon there would be more Palestinians than Israelis. And in fact, the ratio remained the same. And the reason it remained the same, 50-50, is that Orthodox Jews started producing vast numbers of children, about the average of about 12 children per family. And as that population has grown, in fact, fertility within the Jewish part of the country has grown faster than among Palestinians, whereas Palestinians who are Israeli citizens, 2 million of them, have had far fewer children than they did in the past for this reason, that they're better educated, that they want to have a higher standard of living. And so this kind of, nowadays in Israel, the liberal part of Jewish citizens is saying we have lost the struggle, not against the Palestinians, but against the Orthodox. And that's part of what is happening in Israel now, that indeed Judaism as such has been hijacked by a particular group of people, also having many children, among other things, who have created the kind of Judaism that is more like the zealots of Roman times than today, which is Jewish supremacists and extremely violent.
Omer, the final question really is, can Israel find its way back from where it finds itself now?
Look, I think it can, but I must say, and I write that in the book, Zionism, which began as a movement of emancipation, liberation of Jews as a minority, a persecuted minority in Eastern Europe, has transformed itself now into racist, Jewish supremacist ideology of the state that has now justified genocide. And I think for that reason, Israel, which will remain, of course, it's a state, it's internationally recognized. But if it wants to be a member of the international community, if it wants to provide a good life for its own citizens, it has to dump Zionism, put it where it belongs, to the garbage heap of history, and recreate itself as a country that is just and fair and equal to all its citizens.
Omer Bartov, Professor of Holocaust and Genocide Studies at the Department of History and Brown University, author of Israel, What Went Wrong. Thank you very much for joining us now.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk with Timber Living Log Cabins.